from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made on May 2nd at RIT. 30,000 people will spend the day checking out a variety of exhibits designed to sharpen our minds, assist with our physical ailments, and much more. How about a robotic seeing eye dog, new orthotic designs, games to teach children how to read? We are just getting started. I always love this hour. It's one of the most hectic hours of the year on this program, but for good reason, because we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to learn all about Imagine RIT, going inside the minds of the students, the designers, some of their advisors, and the man behind it. So let me welcome the folks who are at the microphones now. And it is, even though you can't see it if you're listening, trust me, it's a packed studio, and we're going to get to a lot of different voices this hour. Barry Culhane is here, chairman of the event, and always fun to talk about this. It is packed in here, isn't it? You got a lot
it
of smart
is.
People
I mean,
in this
you
room.
Know, it's almost going to be as packed as RIT on May 2nd.
May 2nd. I said 30,000. I always in my brain think it's always around 30,000.
Yeah, it's between 35,000 people in one day.
People. And it's a one-day event. It's 10 to 5 on May 2nd, rain or shine, coming up here for Imagine RIT. So around 35,000 people. What are you looking forward to most, Barry?
Well, actually, this year, we're moving from e-vehicle races prior to the opening ceremony at 10. And it's called RIT Meets the Jetsons. And we have 15 teams of students, faculty, and staff competing with drones. And they go into the Polizzini Ice Rink, and they have to follow a series of paths, stop, hover, take pictures of administrators that we've done cardboard cutouts of, and then go to the center of the rink and do like an Olympic freestyle event. So we'll have competitions. The winner will get $1,000 or one of Bill Destler's banjos. And then we'll have Ag Crescitas do a really master's student level freestyle thing that'll knock your socks off and lead right in to the 10 a.m. ceremony inside the Polizzini Ice Rink.
You mentioned Agamemnon Crescitis, who is an RIT professor who is one of the really smart leading minds on drone technology locally. And it's you say the word drone. And we're still in this sort of educational, re-educational period where sometimes people think of drone, they think of one thing. Maybe we need another name for it. And in fact, I think Ag and a few others prefer when we use a different term. So
yeah, we've used flying cars in this case for the RIT Jetsons. Autonomous, you can't say unmanned, unpersoned vehicles, on and on and on. But I think the common language that people use are drones. And they think of either good things or bad things. And there's a little of each, but overall, they're here to stay, and they're going to be flying.
And these are drones for the purpose of good, as we say.
They are indeed, and they're only a pound or two.
They are. That's amazing.
And they don't fly in the White House.
None of the RIT drones will end up anywhere near the White House. That's very important. There's so many different exhibits. How many different... kind of set the scene for us. If you've never been to Imagine RIT, Barry, set the scene for us.
You'll be blown away. If you haven't been to the campus in a while, even if you're an alum, there's over 400 exhibits done by over 2,750 students, faculty, and staff with 600 volunteers, food by Dinosaur Barbecue, and about 10 other venues. It's free and open to the public, rain or shine, and that's important because a family can get there and really not to have to spend any money and just get blown away by how college is really about making, creating, innovating things along the STEAM area, not just science and technology, but arts as well. And there's something for everybody.
Throughout the years, we've seen all kinds of different interesting things. And throughout this hour, we're going to be hearing about some of the ideas that we'll be seeing shown off at Imagine RIT. When you think back over the last 8 years, what's something that stands out to you that you remember and said, wow, that was an amazing idea?
Well, the most popular thing was the hot dog machine, but we've replaced that with s'mores, and we're going to double the output. So I think people will like that a little better, getting a handmade automated s'more. But I think the e-vehicle competitions have been fantastic. I love the fact that we're much more involved with effective access technology research, helping people with differing abilities. And part of that's a partnership with Dan Myers, the L. Siegel community of agencies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the exhibits of the 400 exhibits this year reflect some of that emphasis. And these students are geniuses that have come up with fantastic solutions under the guidance of Dan Phillips and Beth DiBartolo and others to really make life better for people with differing abilities. And that's what really makes me so proud of our our entire RIT community, and it brings us all together.
Dan Phillips is here, an associate professor and head of the biomedical engineering department at RIT, working, among other things, as I understand it, with a team of students on a dual-purpose wheelchair platform swing. I hope I described that accurately. Is that right, Dan?
That's correct.
All right, tell us the purpose. What is it?
Well, I'm on the board of trustees for the Ark of Monroe, and went over and talked to Amanda Bement at their campus on West Henrietta Road and asked, we've done work with the Ark before, what would they like that would help the individuals? And she said, you know, what would be really great is if you could create a swing that we could roll either a wheelchair or put a person on to help them relax. Okay, great. And the amazing part is I brought that back, talked it over with Beth, put a team of students together. And I think the amazing thing is the students went and talked to Amanda and Heather Margeson, the physical therapist over there, and found out what the needs were and have put together what I think is a very impressive swing.
Sometimes at Imagine RIT, we see things that are very early on and kind of ideas that are coming together, and sometimes we see something that's close to a finished product. How do you classify this one?
This one, I think they've produced something that if they could sell it, they would. I just don't think they could afford the students who put it together. but we actually, one of the things that Heather Catone makes sure of is that everything's safe. So we had somebody from Environmental Health and Safety come over and evaluate it, and she was just blown away by the sturdiness of it.
What are the challenges in creating something like that, Dan?
Well, partially making it safe, primarily making it safe, and then really, I think, and it's the educational part for the students, understanding what the needs of the people who are going to use it. And that's really where the effective access technology comes into play. It's easy for engineers to create things that only an engineer would love, but to make it useful for somebody with a need takes a great deal of insight, and I think it's a great part of their education.
Talking to Dan Phillips, who you mentioned you work with Ark of Monroe.
Yes.
On the board, or tell me what you do for them.
Well, I'm on the board, and actually my brother pretty much grew up with the Ark of Monroe and lived at one of the residences. Actually, I still go over to the residence. My brother passed this past year, but it's like a family. It's better going to one of the Ark residences on a good day than going to my own home. Mm.
And I ask because as someone who is a professor at RIT, head of the biomedical engineering department, how valuable is your experience with Ark of Monroe to look at real-life problems and real-life challenges and then look for actual practical applications?
Oh, I think it's transformative, not just for me, but for the students. Through the multidisciplinary senior design program at RIT, we've done a number of projects, not only with the ARC, but with CP Rochester, Mary Cariola, and it's just amazing what the students come out away with by looking at and talking to the individuals. I think empathy is the word that comes to mind.
And the beauty is Dan and I came up with this idea with Dan Myers, and Adam Podolik and a couple of other students are doing co-ops now where they jump from agency to agency with the El Segal. They kind of live the day with the clients, and they really see from the clients what the real problems are. They take those problems back to a team of researchers, about 80 of them at RIT. They kind of work on things with students. They come up with some creative device, and then we get to take it back eventually to them and field test it. But we are on several iterations of a smart cane, and robotic seeing eye dog is in the early stages. So many of these things really come from the direct contact with the people with the needs. And I want to make sure that we know that it's not all just effective access technology. There are tremendous computing and art exhibits, all kinds of games, some of which will be mentioned here.
We're getting there.
I'm sorry. I get a little wrapped up and excited.
And by the way, Barry, I keep using the term exhibit. What's the proper term for what?
That's exactly what we call them, exhibits.
Exhibits at Imagine RIT. So before I kick it over to Adam to talk a little bit more about that experience, Dan, with the dual-purpose wheelchair platform swing, the exhibit there, what will people be able to see it? What can we expect at Imagine RIT?
Well, if they have a wheelchair, they should be able to swing on it. I did want to mention, it's not just me. Certainly my partner in crime, sure. Beth DiBartolo. We've been doing this, actually, where we embed students for a number of years, actually, with the stroke clinic at Nazareth. And it's just not only do you get to see the needs of the individuals, but the people that provide services for them.
Adam Podolek is an electrical engineering student who is graduating in about a month. Is that right?
That's right.
You ready for that?
Definitely.
What are you going to do when you're done?
So I'm going to continue at my current co-op working with Dr. Phillips here and at the Al Siegel Community of Agencies. That's going to take me through the summer. I'm also looking at other work to kind of continue on in that same category for the fall. And then I'm a member of Army ROTC, and I have a commitment to a National Guard base in Concord, New Hampshire. So for about a year and a half, I have follow-on training to do for that. So that's kind of the plan.
And Adam, at Imagine RIT, we're going to be seeing your, or at least hearing about your soft ankle foot orthotic. Is that right?
That's right.
Tell us about it.
So our active ankle foot orthotic is to address foot drop. That is the inability to dorsiflex your foot or pick it up.
Hold on. Dorsal flexing a foot means
dorsiflex means to pick your foot up.
Just to pick it up?
Just to pick it up.
Okay.
So the inability to dorsiflex your foot is caused by a number of things. It could be, you know, having a stroke or multiple sclerosis. It affects over a million people each year. And so current orthotics are very rigid, and they provide that lift continuously all the time when a user is walking. So there's really kind of a need and a want for an orthotic that provides it only when it's needed during a person, when a person is walking, or their, in other words, gait cycle. So what we did is we have an artificial muscle attached to the front of a user's leg on a soft orthotic. We call those McKibben muscles. Those are basically a surgical tube and a mesh. And when pressurized air is put through them, they constrict, and that provides the lift for the foot. So that's on a soft orthotic, and there's straps to the orthotic lower on the foot. And this can be worn with your shoes. And we have sensors in the orthotic. There's a heel sensor, there's a toe sensor, and there's also an IR sensor on it. And using the information from those sensors sent to a logical microcontroller, so that's, you know, kind of just a small computer, and that tells the orthotic when to constrict or when to put pressurized air through the muscle during the gait cycle.
How did you decide this is something you wanted to create?
I don't know if I was kind of assigned the job through senior design, but there was decisions to be made about how we wanted to approach the problem, and we had certain restrictions. So one of those was to use the McKibben muscles, those artificial muscles. And it had to be soft, like an unrigid orthotic, because that was a need expressed by clients that would use this. So, just our team brainstormed, the best course of actions or whatnot to go about how to solve this issue, and that's what we came up with.
I love asking RIT students this next question. You get this kind of assignment. You're trying to create something that's effective, that works.
Mm-hmm.
Do you look around, and because this is a competitive world we're in, are people trying to create things like this elsewhere?
During our initial research and benchmarking, there were people that had similar products, and ours is an iteration of, you know, an ongoing project. Mm-hmm. But it really is innovative. There isn't a product on market that provides this assistance actively during a person's gait.
Well, Dan, why isn't this on the market then?
It takes a little time. Remember that safety thing, that if nothing else, a medical product has to be safe. That's the, believe it or not, the FDA's main job. So, it's great to show the proof of concept, but RIT has really a pipeline that they can take it through the stages that are necessary to bring it to market. It's sort of the beauty of being at RIT. I think we have a really strong business school, really strong center for innovation that's student-oriented.
And I certainly believe that the FDA is safety-oriented. I think the old stat that I had, I don't know if it's true anymore, that it took 9 years to get a drug approved through trials and testing. So Absolutely. That doesn't surprise me at all. But best case scenario, a soft foot orthotic. Do we see, over time, do we see it become more widely available?
I can't see really why not. Then it just becomes a matter of market that would be suitable for. And one of the things that we talk to the students about is this idea of universal design, the principles that go along with this soft orthotic. Well, are there other people that could utilize it? It's sort of like the iPad, if you will. The iPad is a great tool for people with communication disabilities, but it seems like everybody else on the planet has one as well. So it scales up and makes it feasible for people to actually manufacture it. So this is the start. And you know, hopefully, you know, Adam goes out into the world, works for a company, and makes a success and sends money back to RIT.
or better yet, starts a company in Rochester.
That last line is always implied. It's never supposed to be that overt. We're talking to the folks from Imagine RIT. It's coming up May 2nd, 10 to 5 p.m. It is a one-day event, rain or shine. They always expect around 30 to 35,000 people. And Barry, I know the one detail I buried that I should have mentioned as well is 30 to 35,000 people. How do you get there?
Well, you know, it's important to know because we've got great parking all throughout RIT. It's free. But we also have a huge lot at MCC and very regular shuttles. So if you tend to get there in the afternoon, you're probably better off going to MCC and taking the shuttle. You'll get in and out easier. But if you go right to the main campus in Jefferson Road, take any entrance, you can't help but find yourself right in the middle of Imagine RIT because it stretches from the east to the west side of campus. From the Gordon Fieldhouse to the sustainability area on the west side,
Before I take Adam off a microphone, I love to ask the innovators, the designers of all these various exhibits, if you're not tied to yours, what's one that you want to go see on May 2nd?
I would say one definitely would be who is here in the studio is Mike Flezar's project. I can't remember the exact name of it right off the top of my head now, but it's a standing wheelchair, and it's pretty relative to what I'm doing for Dr. Phillips and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies, so it's something I would definitely want to check out.
Okay, well, and Dan Phillips,
mm-hmm.
What are you excited to go see that maybe you didn't have anything to do with, but you can't wait to go see?
There's so many things there. It's just a matter of finding the time to go around and see all of them. I think the best thing, though, is seeing actually the students and how proud of really what they've accomplished.
Well, let me turn the microphone over then, Mike and George over there. Mike and George, you guys are sitting right next to the same mic, but are you working together on this? You are. All right, so you're going to have to huddle up and get nice and close to the microphone. That you work together. You won't be in any trouble
getting
close.
It's not an issue. We're used to being close.
Well, you've got to get closer, Mike. You've got to get right up to that microphone.
All right. It's almost kissing over here.
Mike, you had some praise from Adam over there on what you guys are doing, but tell us about exactly what the project and the exhibit will be at Imagine.
All right. So our project is geared more towards one direct customer. A customer with a need to alleviate different sores and different issues that come with being tied to a wheelchair at all times. She can't stand for more than 45 seconds on her own, and even that is assisted with any sort of standing device that she can get in her rehabilitation centers and such. But so what our objective is to do is to get her a wheelchair that will not only be able to wheel her around in a normal sitting position, but also elevate her to a not completely standing position, as she can't completely take all the weight on her legs, but to about 75% standing, and make it so her legs will be able to take all the weight. So what we're doing is we took an old wheelchair that was provided by her and her mother, and we're using that existing geometry of the base and the control system from that to be able to control and move the wheelchair around. And we built a mechanical system with two linear actuators to lift the base and the back of the chair to get her into a close to standing position.
You used completely wonderfully usable terms until you used the word actuator. What is an actuator?
An actuator is it's a system of a motor and a screw.
Okay.
And a motor has a rotational velocity to it, so it'll spin something around, right? Where an actuator will actually take that rotational velocity and it'll make it apply in one direction, so forward and back, simply spoken.
All right, George, what's the genesis of this project? Something assigned, and take me through the process of trying to kind of work up this kind of a concept.
Sure. We actually had a very interesting beginning, because when our customer approached RIT, and that's how it happened, they were approached, it was out of need. The mother really wanted her daughter to be able to experience the joy of standing up. So we were given the assignment. However, it wasn't very specific. We had a lot of vagueness to it. There was not a ton of detail. So we really had to take the initiative, go out and figure out what the customer needed. Pretty immediately, we talked to our customer and both the mother and daughter and figure out who was the necessary to contact in addition to, such as her physical therapist. And we really had to be detectives and figure out what we needed to do ahead of time.
What was that process like for you, Mike? What was the biggest challenge in that kind of a process?
I would definitely say, I don't know if lack of guidance is the best term of use, but for this instance, I will use lack of guidance, like he was saying. There wasn't any specifics, really. So like he said, we were detectives, and we went and talked to a person that has been designing her wheelchairs for the past, I believe, at least 10 years, as well as her physical therapist, like George said, and her and her mother. And we just used different wants and desires that the customer had on top of the necessities. So we're trying to make this wheelchair as functional, but also as comfortable as possible. And I mean, depending on who you talk to, what was kind of difficult is, obviously the physical therapist wants it to kind of be rehabilitative, whereas Matt, the wheelchair designer, wants it to be just completely functional and comfortable. So we're trying to make the wheelchair as, I guess, versatile as possible, but still making sure it meets all the needs. So basically getting all the needs as well as functionality has definitely been a difficult aspect of this project.
How do you feel about the result?
It's coming together. I'm definitely excited with the result. We've had to do a couple redesigns throughout the process, but that comes when we run into issues. So I'm pleased with the progress. I'm not sure how.
Yeah, well, George, what do you think?
It's been a learning experience. You know, this whole year has been a journey, and we start at a designing aspect, and then we have to move on into implementing it, you know. But it doesn't always go together as we plan it. There's been two or three changes that we've had to seriously pull off a couple of late nights for, you know. But at the end of it, it's coming together well. We need to implement our most recent change and then perform some testing, but we'll definitely be ready for Imagine, and this chair will definitely be ready for our customer.
All right, so what's it going to look like at Imagine for you?
We should be fully functional, and it should be able to be at least shown off at Imagine RIT. I'm not sure whether we're going to let the public use it purely for the fact of liability reasons and such. But
sure.
I mean, I will test it and show it, or one of my team members will test it and show it to whoever wants to see it. And basically all it'll do is someone will start in a sitting position and they can drive around, or then we can stand them up and you can then drive them around. It's just a simple switch that changes the power from the batteries going from driving the chair to powering the actuators. So it's just a simple flick of a switch, and then you push them up and down. So it's pretty simple, and we can show it, and it will be ready for Imagine RIT.
And so you talk about your own response to this, but what about the people you're working with and thinking about as you work on this? What's their reaction?
They're actually at the machine shop right now implementing our most recent design change. Issues can come up pretty unexpectedly. So we actually had one more group member that was interested in being here, but decided to take the hit and stay back and work on it. So I think we're all pleased with it, though, because it's stressful at first not knowing exactly how the end product is going to come together. But as you see it come together, it just has a more fulfilling feeling.
Sounds like there's some last-minute cramming going on.
Always.
Always last-minute cramming. But as George said, seeing is definitely believing. As it's coming together, we were definitely scratching our heads a lot of times through this process and really like you said, pulling off late nights and having a lot of trouble believing in what we were doing. But because it's for such a good cause and for a specific customer, and we can see how excited her and her mother are about the idea, we really were more inspired, I guess, to make sure we got it done. And as it's coming together, it's just great because we can see all of the design process and late nights, I guess, proving to be a good concept and actually working.
Barry Culhane, what do you think about what Mike and George are doing?
I just smile and get very excited. You know, RIT is one of the greatest places to work in the world, but it's because of the really creative, hardworking students who take on things and are willing to work in teams. I think, you know, we've got the kind of the left brain with all of the motors and the technical things, but we also have the right brain and the need for design and the beauty, and the fact that we've got students that can cut across all these and work together is probably one of the most exciting things to do. When you see a product come out of students, you realize that you can inspire students all over the world, really, to say that college and higher education is just not about books. It's about making a real difference in people's lives, and that's what's exciting.
Barry, you call yourself a left or right brain kind of person.
I am right down the fissure of Orlando in the middle. I like to draw, and I like, and I'm a math, was a math major, so I like a little of each. You know, everybody's different, and that's the thing that I love at RIT, is that we tend to find people's really unique skills, whether they're left brain, right brain, or good at both, and put them together and make them work on something cool.
Yeah, it is very interesting to see these kind of partnerships, because I grew up thinking right brain. Yeah. And I actually emphasized it so much that I think I let my left brain atrophy. I kind of gave up on it early on. And I actually regret that. I do. So Mike and George, who's the do you guys think of yourselves as sort of one's a right brain, one's a left brain?
More just one team.
Okay.
I love it.
That's a good answer.
We have six brains.
Six brains on the team. But on the concept of creativity versus the technical, is that something that you're not really cognizant of when you're working, you're designing, or do you think of your own strengths when you're working in that way?
With this project, from what I've seen, it seems that whenever we get an issue or encounter some sort of issue, someone different even will come up with a solution to that particular problem. It never seems to be the same person always coming up with one solution. So it seems like between us all, we'll all pick each other's brains and we'll talk ideas amongst each other until we seem to come to an issue. So it's more talking amongst the group and getting a whole consensus before we try to come up with a solution.
What do you think, George?
I totally agree with that. A lot of our different solutions that we've come up with have come from different people. Everyone has a voice, you know? So if one person comes up with an idea, another might even say something to add on to it to make it better. There are a lot of surviving aspects of our design right now that have aspects of something that each of us have suggested in the past.
All right. I have asked everyone the same question then, and you're going to be there at Imagine RIT, but if you could break free for an hour, you'd want to go see what? What stands out first and foremost?
You know, I've only seen most of the different engineering projects, so I think I want to take a look at some of the other ones. I know there's some software people over there, and I even have a buddy in the software engineering department that I hope to check out.
Mike?
I'm definitely also very interested in looking at the other assistive devices, like Adam's over there, as well as one you'll hear from later, the pediatric standard, because it's kind of a child standing type of device, mm-hmm. which seems really cool. But I'm also with George. There's a lot of really cool things that computer science does with different graphical features and such that I would like to see. So I'm just interested in seeing all the new innovations and designs that are all throughout the campus.
All right, well, I'm way late for a break, so I'm going to get that break in, and then we're going to come back and hear much more about what's coming up at Imagine RIT. It's May 2nd, the annual event, the 8th annual, 10 to 5 p.m. at RIT, May 2nd, and that's rain or shine. Though, as Barry says, it's always the weather's always good or good enough. So
yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to hear much more about what you can expect to see there on one of the more fun conversations we'll have all year on this program. Short break and more on Imagine RIT next. And coming up Wednesday on The Next Connections, the first hour we talk about Startup New York. You might have seen some comments in the news recently about a lack of results. Well, Some members from the state leadership say give it time. We're going to talk about Startup New York, expectations, and results. And then the second hour, shifting gears entirely, John Kovach, the director of the Institute for Popular Music from the University of Rochester, joins us with American Idol judge Cara Diagardi. They're in studio. She's in Rochester. And we're talking about the pop music industry in 2015. It's all coming up Wednesday on Connection.
How much air pollution is emitted from oil and gas fields around the country? Researchers are looking for answers thousands of feet up.
Basically, I'm sucking air in through that tube, and it goes into the instrument and then back out the belly of the plane at the exhaust.
Monitoring shale fields from an airborne research lab today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4. On WXXI.
All right, welcome back to Connections, and we're shifting out here. Barry, this is Barry and I are going to kind of pirate the ship. We're going to captain the ship. I don't think pirating is the right term. We don't pirate anything at RIT. But they are switching up because we've got so many people to talk about what's coming up at Imagine RIT. But for our listeners who are just joining us, if they've never been to Imagine RIT, what's the concept on May 2nd?
The concept is you get an opportunity to come to a place that is so creative and innovative across all disciplines and see what is being made as a result of a college education. And you are welcome to cross Jefferson Road and come into that campus free and open to the public. I can't stress that enough. It's a great family event. It costs a lot less than going to the movies. And you will be inspired. And we're finding, Evan, that we get a lot of middle school kids that have decided on the spot, this is where I want to go to school. So it's because they realize that it's that it isn't really boring. It's quite exciting.
No question about it. We've talked a lot about STEM on this program in recent weeks, but this is the showcase, the practical showcase, mm-hmm. where you take ideas or concepts and you can actually start to see and sometimes demonstrate. And that's what's so neat. How many exhibits?
400 exhibits that Heather Catone has put together with some great teams of people over the last really 7-8 years. And they're different every year because, of course, we get a whole new series of juniors and seniors who have a lot more interests.
Well, John Green is in studio. Jonathan Green is working on a device, as I understand it, to allow young children with disabilities to move independently. Is that right, John?
That's correct.
All right, tell us about it.
Well, the title of our project is called the Pediatric Motorized Stander. It's a pediatric standard. It's built for children ages 3 to 5. And currently, there are no motorized standers on the market. What makes a stander different than a wheelchair is you're able to be in an upright position, something that's very important for a child. If you're in a sitting position and most of your peers are in a standing position, you're being looked down upon, and it's important for psychological development for the child to be on the same level as their peers. Also, for a student or a child who has something, a disability such as cerebral palsy, they may not be able to stand as often, and their bone density may be lesser than a child with no disability. So being in a standing position helps them grow their bone density, and if they take a fall, it reduces their likelihood of breaking a bone.
It's amazing to hear about some of these things. Barry and I have been talking about just the impact of the practical application of this. Have you thought about the way this could impact kids' lives?
Absolutely. We took many visits to CP Rochester with Linda Brown. We're working as her, she's our customer at CP Rochester, and we got to see many kids in the stander. This is currently the third iteration of this stander, and we have two models already at CP Rochester. And not only the look on their faces when they're able to be mobile for the first time and independently mobile, but also to see them develop and learn how to use the controls on the stander is a learning opportunity for them as well.
Very cool stuff. So if we come out to Imagine RIT, again, there's so many different exhibits, they'll find you and they'll be able to see what?
They'll actually be able to demo the stander. Any child ages 3 to 5 that meets the weight requirement can use the stander themselves. One of the interesting aspects of this phase of the project is we developed a remote control for the stander. So we're able to control the stander independently of the child controlling the stander. But in addition, the child can move themselves around. So that's we'll be able to demonstrate that at Imagine-RI3.
Kids 3 to 5, I'm trying to think. I've got a 3-year-old. What's the weight requirement?
About 50 pounds.
About 50 pounds. Okay.
Yes.
He can eat a lot between now and then. but really neat stuff. So very cool stuff. And Jonathan, what's your own educational background? Here at RIT, you're what year student are you?
I'm a graduating senior.
Graduating mechanical engineer. What are you going to do?
I currently have a position at one of my co-ops that I worked previously back home, Zebra Technologies.
And, you know, to some degree, some people will hear this hour and think, well, boy, this is a lot of good, pub for RIT. But I think what people are seeing is very legitimately, when we talk about placement, we talk about actually finishing school and getting jobs and getting out into the workplace. Have you had any trouble with that, Jonathan?
I have not, no. Definitely one of the top reasons I chose RIT is the co-op program. Certainly 5 years later, I would say that would be the number one reason why I would choose it again. I've been on two co-ops. I co-opted at Volvo in Pennsylvania and back home on Long Island at Zebra Technologies. And the experience that I've gotten doing that, I think, is entirely invaluable. I don't think I would be the same going into the job search or the job workforce without that experience.
Well, congratulations. It's great stuff. Going around the table, Katie Teague is here. And Katie is the associate producer of a game called Splatter Shmup.
That's right.
Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Yep, that's right.
What is Splatter Shmup?
So Splatter Shmup is a shoot 'em up game where you play as a spaceship and you fire on this canvas and you're trying to blow up the other spaceships. Every spaceship you blow up, they leave a paint explosion in the background, and everywhere you fly on the canvas, it leaves lines everywhere. So you're trying to create art that mimics Jackson Pollock's splatter-based painting.
a shoot 'em up game with Jackson Pollock in art. How did this come together?
So this idea was made by Andrew Phelps, who is the director of the Magic Center at RIT. And then we took a class last semester called Production Studio, where I worked with the team, and we made this game.
And Katie, you're a fourth-year design and development major.
Yep.
You want to do what?
Games.
You want to do this?
I make games, yeah.
and that's what you're doing already.
Yeah.
But why did what attracted you to making games?
When I was a kid, I really liked playing games, and I really liked figuring out, like, why they worked and how did they know, like, what rooms I were in and stuff like that. So I really wanted to help create that experience for other users.
The video game market right now.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a slowdown. This is one of those really stable, probably in perpetuity. From now until the end of the human race, there'll probably be a lot of interest in games.
Yeah.
Does it feel like a stable kind of market for you to go into?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what does the creation of a game entail? I mean, that's the kind of thing we could talk about for hours. But
But
give me the kind of the short version, easily digested, of start to finish of a game like this.
Yeah, so to make our game last semester, we had 15 students making it, and they were from all different fields. Like, we had a bunch of artists, we had a sound team, we had game programmers, we had graphics programmers, and we, you know, just started working on a timeline together. You know, there's so many different, like, bits and pieces that come into making a game.
The biggest challenge is what?
Communication. Because, you know, everybody is working hard and working really hard on their stuff, but they just forget to tell everybody else what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So,
why Jackson Pollock, for example?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it was Andy's idea at the beginning, and we all kind of became really close and became really obsessed with Jackson Pollock. Like, my cell phone case right now is Jackson Pollock. So,
let me back up then and ask you. You grew up playing. I'm sure you grew up playing.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you remember from your childhood? What's the first memories of playing games?
I just remember always being, like, sucked away to, like, a different world and being able to, like, enjoy a new experience, and that's something that I want to continue doing for everybody who plays games.
What kind of games?
I don't know if I'm. My favorite game growing up was Banjo-Tooie. It was like an MMO game, so, like, you played as a character and you, like, went around this world and you explored and you tried picking up pieces and save your sister. It was cool.
Banjo-Tooie.
Yeah.
I feel
that was my favorite game.
I know Barry and I are looking at each other. I feel so out of touch. I don't know. Our engineer Val. Yes or no? No. Val's only 25. No. Okay. See, I feel good about this now. I had not heard of Banjo-Tooie, and you said MMO.
Yeah.
It's What's
that? It's an online player, like you play with other people.
What does MMO stand for?
Multiplayer online game.
Multi. Okay. So Banjo-Tooie was. I grew up playing Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, like I played that too.
Did you
that
really? Was a lot of fun. Is that still a thing?
That's
for
still
kids?
A thing. They keep coming out with new games. They came out with like 6 months ago, I think.
And part of me thinks like I'm the old school. I kind of like the blocky graphics, the sort of the not very realistic stuff, mm-hmm. the really cartoony stuff. But the world has moved into some amazingly realistic stuff. What is your favorite genre right now?
That's hard. I like playing online games with other people because I like being connected and staying in touch with everybody. I also like playing a lot with the virtual reality games that are coming out soon because that brings gaming to like a whole new level.
What is a virtual reality example? What kind of game?
Oculus Rift. They're coming out with a lot of games for that, and it's a big thing that you put on your eyes, and you can like look up and down, and it'll look around in the world for you.
What is Minecraft? Minecraft.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah, everyone loves that.
Now, is that what age range is playing Minecraft? Adults?
Everybody.
Kids, adults? Yeah.
Kids to adults, yeah. I actually worked at a summer camp 2 summers ago, and one of the classes there was to teach kids how to like make like levels and make games while playing Minecraft.
All right, so Katie, I need you to – this is very important.
Yeah.
Because I am the curmudgeon on the panel, right? I'm the guy who doesn't get it. We visited some friends last year. Their daughters, who are 13, 14, and 11, they're playing Minecraft.
Yeah.
And that's all they wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
And so I finally sat down to play with them, and I couldn't understand the allure. But – they knew it so well. They're creating these worlds, and I was blown away by what they were able to do. Mm-hmm. What draws you into it?
It's pretty much like Legos, but like without having to clean it up at the end.
It does kind of look like Legos.
Yeah.
And the graphics there are a little blocky too, but they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. Is there an educational component to it?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. So one of the classes that I also taught at the summer camp was programming. Like, you can mod this game, and like that's something that like kids ages 13 to 16 could easily pick up by taking any like online programming class. So like they can take their skills that they learn and, you know, learning computer programming, and then bring it into Minecraft and use that to like edit the code base and create a brand new game based on Minecraft.
So now at least I feel like I'm understanding a little bit more. So before I wrap up with you, Splatter Shmups the game. Are people going to be able to play it? What's the goal with this kind of a game?
Yeah, so we actually just won an award in Germany for the Digital DIRGA, Digital Research Games Association. And we were at GDC a couple weeks ago, so that was a lot of fun. We're going to be showing it at Imagine RIT as well in the Innovation Center, and it's available online at splattershmup.rit.edu.
Splattershmup.rit.edu. And if you go to Imagine RIT, you can see it being played. Can they try playing
it? Yep, they
can
absolutely play it.
They can play the
game?
Yeah,
and they can take home their art with them.
And so this is an educational game too, though. I mean, it really is. As a designer, do you have an ethical foundational approach, or do you look at games, because some games are violent and some games are sort of questionable for parents, do you have a mindset going into the field that says, I want to create games that are like this, I don't want to create games that are like that?
I'm kind of really open to what kind of games I want to make, but I definitely want like, you know, my users to like have an enjoyable experience and maybe even take a couple things away from it too. So.
Well, congrats, Katie.
Thank you.
Congrats on the award for Splatter Shmup, and we'll have fun playing at Imagine RIT.
Yeah, it's thank you.
May 2nd, Imagine RIT, 10 to 5, as Barry Culhane keeps telling us, it's free, which is the best price you can get, and open rain or shine on May 2nd. We've been going around the room in a packed setting, and so I want to make sure we get to everybody. David.
Hello.
David Amata is here, and David, my understanding is you're building a game to teach young children how to read?
Yes, this is correct.
So how do you do that?
So our game, Remy and the Book of Rhymes, is a tablet-based game with 2D tower defense mechanics, where we emphasize reading mechanics of orthography using the letter combinations and the sounds that they make to teach the basic components of reading.
Or did you say orthography?
Yes.
What is that?
Orthography is recognizing the correct spelling of words and their associated verbal sounds. So if you combine A and T, you know that that word means at.
Uh-huh. Oh, see, very, very cool. So how did this kind of project come about?
This came about as a collaboration with the Global Literacy Project, headed up by Marianne Wolf and Stephanie Gottwell at the Tufts University, as well as Tinsley Gazlin at MIT. And we designed it to fill in some of the gaps within the app market to help teach certain reading mechanics that are not necessarily filled in within the current app store. So we designed it as an opportunity to teach these mechanics to be part of this app suite, as well as create a fun experience to educate children.
And aimed at kids how old?
We're aiming for about a 5 to 9 range.
5 to 9 range. And wow, I mean, we have talked so often on this program about just the value of literacy and whatnot. David, you're how old?
I'm 21 right
now.
See,
you're 21. You're just getting into the world. You know, you're doing all these amazing things. But when I was 21, I was so focused on my own school that it's hard to think of the wider world. Are you now sort of aware of just the possible impact for this kind of project?
Now, the great goal for this project is to help remove a lot of the global literacy within the world. So we noticed there's some statistics saying that there's about 200 million kids that won't necessarily be able to read within the next couple generations. And we can help improve that by producing these apps. And illiteracy has a lot of consequences within the world towards poverty and crime.
Yeah.
And by helping influence apps that can fill areas that traditional teaching might not necessarily impact, we can help fill that void and help decrease those numbers.
All right. So, again, show us or kind of help us envision how this will work.
So it's a 2D top-down tower defense game. So it uses touch mechanics to combine letters together in order to defend against enemy waves. So our world is this fantasy setting with a variety of villages that you go from to kind of save and defend. So in these villages, they each represent a different vowel grouping. So we try to teach a series of words over the progression. So you go through the A, E, I, O, U words. And that allows you to give you a lot of influence towards how we teach the words and the order that we present them. So this helps create a natural progression how you want to learn certain words.
It's important that it is educational. It is very important that it is also fun.
Yes.
Is it fun?
Yeah. Well, we certainly hope so. We first need to get the testing, but we think we're having a lot of fun with it.
You need a sample size of 5 to 9-year-olds to help tell you. Have you been working with them? Have you tried it out?
We're trying to get that testing environment through the environment Imagine RIT, and that will give us a lot more feedback on how
okay.
we can improve.
So on May 2nd at Imagine RIT, if families bring 5 to 9-year-olds out,
mm-hmm.
they can test it out?
Yep. It will be playable on the floor. Should be in the Innovation Center.
What a cool idea. Is any part of you that's kind of nervous to see it in action?
There's always that hesitation. You think, like, what have we been working on for 10 weeks? Is this actually going to pan out? Because it always comes together at the last couple weeks.
And so you're in the game, you are defending your villages from the invaders, you said.
We call them the unread, and there's these smoky...
The unread.
Yeah, these smoky cloud monsters that take on these certain animal qualities, and they have components missing from them as they each represent a certain word. So you, as Remy, our hero of the story, has these tiles he can use to drag onto these enemies and to kind of complete them, and that neutralizes them as a threat.
Smoky cloud monsters.
Yes.
Now, the problem with the smoky cloud monster that I watched for 6 years is the ending on Lost, they never figured it out in advance. So I hope that you've got a good ending.
We're very clear with where we want to go with the
very
game.
Very good. That is a great idea. And David, if this really works going forward, how accessible can this be? Where would people be able to get it?
Well, we're hoping to get onto the Google Play Store as we're positioning it for Android tablets. And as part of the Global Literacy Project, we're trying to position this for their tablet program, which they deliver a set of tablets to remote villages that are looking to educate and learn reading. So being part of that app suite will help teach these children, as well as being free and accessible to everyone. And over the time, we will like to progress into other platforms like iOS, mobile, web, and possibly consoles, depending on how we kind of progress with the game. So we're really hoping to have this be an open source model and available to the maximum amount of people.
Jeez, Barry,
this is so exciting. You know, one of the best things that President Dessler brought is this idea of Imagine IT. And I think games will have a meteoric, significant effect on the methodology for education that will improve it significantly, individualize learning, and get the kind of interest. And that's really what we need to get kids really involved when they don't even realize they're learning.
All right, around the table, where do you guys want to go check out at Imagine RIT when you can break away from your own station? David?
Well, I definitely want to see Splatter Shmup. It seems really exciting.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to play it yet?
Not yet.
Okay, Katie Teague, one of the creators of Splatter Shmup, what do you want to check out?
I also want to play David's game. That sounds really cool. But also in the game lab, there will be also tons of other game design and development students' games, so I definitely want to go hang out there and play the other games.
Okay, Jonathan Green?
Well, of course, I'd love to see the other engineering projects that my friends have been slaving away on all year. But the Latin dance team will be performing, so that might be fun to go to, and the swing dance team will be there as well.
The Latin dance team and swing dancing as well. See?
It's and there's a ukulele band. I mean, you know, there's everything there, believe me.
All right. If you've missed most of the conversation, we'll wrap with this. Barry Culhane is here, the chairman of Imagine RIT. It's the eighth year. And if people want to attend, it is free, but what should they know about parking and attendance?
Parking is free at MCC and on campus. We'll get a good mix of people throughout the day, but culminating in 30 to 35,000 people. Heather Catone and others have put together a plan your day that you can do in advance on the computer. If you go to rit.edu/imagine and click on plan your day, you can actually decide what you want to see in advance and have a little map that'll show you where to go around campus.
I used it this morning, by the way.
Oh, cool.
And it works really, really well because, as Barry mentioned, when you've got potentially 400 exhibits, as much as you'd like to from 10 to 5 do them all, you can't. But rit.edu/imagine, mm-hmm. Plan your day, easy to find out what is out there and sort of pick and choose where you want to go. I know people use it every year.
You might even want to see John Scholl, who's doing those 3D prosthetic hands. There are a lot of 3D exhibits.
We talked about that in this program last year. Amazing stuff. Yeah. Amazing stuff. Hey, everybody who's involved with RIT, Imagine RIT, congratulations to all of you, Jonathan, Katie, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And May 2nd, 10 to 5, have fun. Barry, congrats again. 8 years of this. And what we saw from students are not only really innovative ideas, but really valuable ideas to people. Whether it's accessibility, LSEGL agencies, community agencies, so much appreciates it, and so do we. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It's greatness through difference, and we're getting there.
You got it. Thanks for listening today, and thanks to Val LaBanca behind the glass, our engineer. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Member Supported Public Radio.